This is a Pod Dealers Network podcast.
All right, so before I start today, I just wanted to say something real quick. I've been reading some things that kind of bother me, and I'm going to use I statements, but I just want to say, for me personally, in my quest for mental health, my focus is on learning how to better cope with what the world throws me. I in no way feel like I should be able to tell the world what to throw. Whoever needed to hear that, or whatever it means to you, I just wanted to get that off my chest real quick. But with that being said, hi Rhapsody.
What is TWS podcast, episode, whatever, who cares at this point?
The rant of the vindicated.
It's my podcast and I do what I want to.
People, listen.
Word, is it still live?
It's not working for me, Rip. We're going to keep going.
I know I changed my voice at work.
Bars on the radio.
What is TWS podcast?
I'm ready.
I feel like the end is
staring at my watch and I'm feeling so new school.
Suicide attempts, how many tries to take?
Damn, ready.
Hate that nigga. Hey, damn. Hate is vicious. All right, welcome to another episode of What is TWS Podcast. As always, I am your host, J.Dot Flan. And joining me on this episode is someone I'm really excited to have on the show. Gave me my first opportunity to be a guest on someone else's podcast. And I think that was a really dope episode. I had a really great time recording with these guys. And then he's stuck with us through all of the breaks for mental health and the inconsistencies and dropping episodes. Always been around to support and contribute in, you know, the Facebook communities or give feedback. So I'm really, really grateful to have this guy on the show and to finally fulfill a promise, because I have made several attempts. You know, I've made several promises about, yeah, we're going to do this episode. And then, like, for various reasons, I flaked out. But this time, I hit him like right on time on the schedule for when we said we was going to record. Like, I'm trying to be as on time and professional about this one as I possibly can. But I have on the show with me Dan. Dan, if you want
to. Hey, how's it going? Yeah, I'm so excited to be here. Yeah, it's been a long time, but I've loved following everything you guys you do on social media. And, you know, your really honest posts on there, it's been great. And then catching up on your podcast every now and again, it's been great too. So, yeah, really happy that I can be back with you here doing this.
Yeah, man, definitely appreciate you giving us some of your time. I got to ask, man, as I follow you on social media, it seems like you're, like, everywhere. Where in the world are you right now, if you can tell, if you can say?
Yeah, sure. I'm actually an English teacher in South Korea. I've taught like elementary, middle, and high, but finally now I'm teaching university students, which is really great. It was kind of a dream for me to be a university kind of professor. So yeah, I'm in Korea. It's 10 a.m. right now, so it's evening for you, but it's super early for me. I got my cup of coffee. I'm ready to go.
All right, cool. So yeah, not to diss any of my previous guests, but you may be the most learned person we've had on the show so far.
I hope I can live up to that, but I probably can't. So we'll see. Education doesn't really mean a whole lot if you don't do anything with it. So
gosh. And it's also cool because my mother spent a career as an English teacher. She taught 11th grade English. So yeah, I spent my youth getting my grammar corrected all the time,
and that's great.
Answering the phone, "This is he," which confused all of my friends. They didn't get that one.
I got to use that subject instead of object. Yeah.
All right. So I know. Cool. I know the topic we had talked about discussing on here was sort of forgiveness. And that was sort of the reason why I picked that that intro music to play. I think, you know, love and hate go a lot into the whole idea of forgiveness. We tend to be more willing to forgive people that we say we love, and you know, and have no willingness to forgive people that we feel like we hate, and the two emotions are so closely tied that it's, you know, it's a weird situation. I would say for me personally, this episode is a part of my like quest, I guess, for forgiveness. You know, I've talked about it in the past. You know, I'm in recovery. I'm doing a 12-step program. I'm currently on step 8, and for those that don't know, step 9 is making amends. And I'm not at step 9, but you know, my addict mind is always, I'm always at the finish line already. So I'm cheating a little bit on this episode. I do have you, Dan, as a person that I needed to make amends to, because I definitely felt like there were so many times where, you know, I had these ideas and I was excited about them, and I was probably hitting you up, and I don't know if you could tell from, you know, the messages that, you know, I was excited about these things, and maybe I was passing that excitement on to you, and then I would flake out every time. It was multiple times. Like, it was really bad. It was really unprofessional of me. It wasn't the person that I wanted to be at the time. But you know, some of the stuff that I was participating in kind of led into that. But I think this, you know, this for me was an attempt to sort of make some amends for that, like to actually stick with something. You know, you had an idea and I said, yeah, let's do it, and like to actually do it. And I think that, you know, speaking of forgiveness, to me that's the number one qualification for forgiveness, that you want it, you know, that you are remorseful for what you did. You know, and
yeah, that's a big thing. I mean, obviously, yeah, I don't think you did anything wrong that warrants forgiveness. But if it's meaningful for you, then I definitely forgive you for any flakiness. But yeah, I think showing that you are remorseful is a big thing. And sort of even collectively as a society, when we see should we forgive this person or not, we have to see that they're trying to make amends. And that, you know, they've been through something, they've been punished somehow, they've lost something, and you know, they show some kind of remorse, and they're trying to make it right. I think if we don't see that, it's a lot harder to forgive someone. So yeah, that's very important.
Yeah, and I am also still learning that, you know, as much as I do feel like that's a qualification for forgiveness, that forgiveness is really for you, for the forgiver. You know, like it lets you let go of something. I need to seek it, because I know I've hurt a lot of people, you know, with some of my actions. But then in my own personal life, I also now have to, you know, come face to face with the fact that if I am looking for forgiveness, I have to at the same time be willing to forgive. So I know I've done things, you know, that I wish, I hope that people can find it in their hearts to forgive me for. And so I have to, you know, dig deep, and you know, find spaces in my heart to forgive people for the things that they've done that I feel hurt me.
Yeah, there's an expression like we judge others on their actions, and we judge ourselves on our intentions.
Yeah.
And so when we're seeking that forgiveness, I didn't intend to do anything wrong. But when we're trying to forgive other people, we're like, well, what did you do? And it's really hard to look at their intentions. It's hard to look at the circumstances, and it's hard to even look at how they may have evolved as a person since then. So yeah, you know, asking for forgiveness is difficult, but I think it can be even harder to forgive others, because all you have to go off, you're not in their mind, and it's hard to put yourself in their mind. So all you can go off is what they actually did. And then we have to assess whether or not like that we can forgive what their action. But if you can look deeper into, you know, into their intentions, into how they've changed, I think that can help you put you in a mindset where you need to ask others for forgiveness, but you also need to be able to forgive them for something, based on information that you don't have, yeah. You know, it really reminds me, yeah, of this, amazing, like probably the greatest act of forgiveness I've ever seen. And that's this situation with Botham Jean's killer and his brother in court. I mean, it's gone crazy viral. Everyone's seen it, I'm sure. But he basically forgave the woman who killed his brother, like in front of everybody. And the thing that amazed me so much about it was I've seen people do that kind of forgiveness where they're like, I forgive you, but God won't, you know, that kind of thing, where there's a lot of cynicism to it. It doesn't seem like a genuine act of forgiveness.
Right.
With him, there was no cynicism. There was nothing other than forgiveness in his heart. And that was amazing because, you know, losing a sibling, I think sibling, you know, the closeness between siblings is probably the greatest relationship you can have. You grow up with them and stuff, and losing someone who you truly love because of the actions of another, and then being able to forgive them without any impurity, like a pure act of forgiveness. That's one of the craziest things I've ever seen. That was like something that made me step back and go, wow, like this is the purest form of forgiveness, and it transcends everything. I've seen the, you know, I know there's the racial thing, and you know, there's so many sociopolitical things that are tied to it, but to me it transcends all of that, and it just comes down to the core of what it is to be human. Can you as a human forgive another human who took everything away from you? You know, it was really an amazing thing to see. I don't know how you felt when you saw that.
Yeah, I mean, it in this journey that I'm on now, the way I'm understanding it, and I hope this helps some people, because there's some people got really upset about it. Like it became this polarizing act where, you know, there were folks that were just pissed off that, you know, how could the judge hug her, or how could the bailiff show any sort of compassion? How could the brother forgive her? And for me, with what I'm experiencing and what I'm learning right now, like, it can almost be a selfish act. Like it is difficult to hold on to those kind of negative emotions. Like you need to let them go. Like forgiving a person is for you, you know, because his forgiveness, I mean, maybe it lifted a weight off of her shoulder, or maybe it made her feel a little better, but it didn't change her punishment. You know, it doesn't change the consequences of her actions. But to me, it definitely allows him to live on without holding on to some, you know, sort of hate that, you know, I hate cliches and stuff, but, you know, when you do these 12-step programs, they're fucking full of cliche. Like, all you learn is little sayings,
yeah.
You know, and it's the whole, you know, like, hate is, you know, drinking poison, hoping somebody else dies, you know, and it's like, mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of the thing. Like, you gotta let it go. And, like, I wouldn't be mad at the guy, because I feel like that was mostly for him. That was, you know, he needed to let that go. You know, and we need to allow him the space to let that go. It's not even about her. You know, it's about him. It was his brother.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. That's why the act is all that powerful, because it was about him. And yeah, the sociopolitical stuff, I saw some articles about it and watched some videos. And there is the argument that, like, why should, you know, the black people who keep getting wronged, why should they be the ones who have the onus to forgive? But I feel like nobody has the onus to forgive in that situation. Nobody should be asked or demanded or expected to forgive. That's what was so unexpected about it, was the fact that he was willing to. So I felt like that didn't really make a lot of sense. And then Trevor Noah did a really good thing on it. He talked about how maybe we should not be looking at it as like, why is it that this white woman's being treated, you know, with compassion, but why isn't everyone being treated with compassion? Why can't a judge look at everyone who's done something wrong and look at them as a human being rather than as a criminal, you know, so showing that same level of compassion? And so I do see where all this anger is coming from about it, but looking at the act of forgiveness itself is very transcendent. And I think that beyond the sociopolitical, which is there, it's such a good thing to look at how that act of forgiveness is really going to help the young man. He's 18 years old.
Yeah.
I mean, holy cow, that is some crazy, like, old monk, you know, kind of something that takes a lifetime of, you know, devoutness and resolve to build up that level to be able to forgive someone. And he's done it at 18. That's an amazing thing. That's really a powerful act of forgiveness, and it is going to help him too.
So it was
great to see.
Thank you for making that point, because I guess Young people, I hope you forgive me. I owe you a little bit of an apology. But here's another situation where I can learn from you without you being in my face with it. Like, let me tell you something about forgiveness. No, he just did something, and I learned from it, you know. So, young people, you're not that bad, and maybe you're not as dumb as I said last week. I don't even know when I'm going to hear this, but you're not as dumb as I said in previous episodes. But still, I'd appreciate it if you just shut the fuck up about it.
Yeah, I did get some of that get off my lawn vibe when I listened to that episode, that sort of old man stuff. You know, and when we were young, I just imagine all the stupid crap that we did that, you know, wasn't on YouTube or wasn't on social media. And, you know, but then I see amazing things like this young man, and I see like Greta Thunberg, the like 16-year-old who's, you know, who knows more about climate change than most of us ever will. You know, you see these amazing sparks of youth and realize like it's always the same. It's always going to be, there's going to be so many dumbasses. There's going to be, you know, and then there's going to be these people who shine through. But then there's also going to be these young dumbasses like maybe I was or maybe you were when we were younger, who are going to grow up and hopefully mature and hopefully be able to look back at these kids now and maybe forgive them for the acts, realizing they're probably going to mature out of it, hopefully. So maybe we need to look at the youth now and forgive them for what they're doing, because we know in the future they'll probably be all right.
I'm trying. I'm trying. I really
am. I know. I can see that's a pet peeve of yours, and last you were just trying to get it off your chest, which is totally cool.
I just got to get the email out from time to time.
Exactly. So, but yeah, I also forgive the youth of today for their stupidity, because I was one of them. And it's always going to be cyclical. It's always a cycle, you know. Everyone's going to look back at their childhood and say, man, those were the best times. And then, you know, when they're older, they're going to be like, why isn't it like it was back then? And it's a cycle. You know, when we were kids, holy cow, everyone was like talking about how great the 70s and, you know, the 70s and 80s were and stuff like that. Or even, you know, either how great it was or how much harder it was. So it's like, make up your mind. Was it greater? Was it better? Or was it harder? You know, I had to go uphill both ways in the snow, you know, but kids could play outside and didn't have to worry about. I hate that, because when I was young, everyone was like, you remember when you didn't have to worry about the stranger coming up in the van, asking you to get in the van and, you know, all the kidnapping and stuff. But now I keep seeing like people my age who are posting memes like, you remember when we were kids and we could just play outside unattended? I was like, no, that was when like, you remember those shows, like all the missing kids shows were like the most popular shows.
Oh yeah,
like Unsolved Mysteries and all about, Most Wanted.
Yeah, that was started and by a dad so parents, who lost his kid or something, right?
Yeah. Parents were terrified back then. So this whole nostalgia cycle, I get it. It's a very easy trap to fall in. But I would recommend not remembering our youth as this wonderful utopia and realizing it's just different. It doesn't make it better or worse, you know.
All I'm saying is, when I was a kid, I could drink out the faucet. I could drink out the water hose in the yard, and now I got to pay like $3 for a bottle of water, or I got to fear for my life. So I don't know.
That is a scam. Bottled water is a scam, and the fact that having bottled water as a product allows cities to not address clean water issues. Yeah, that's bullshit. There is legit bullshit that we should be figuring out and solving, and the clean water crisis is a huge one, especially in a developed country. That's always something when you talk about or when you post on, I'm just like, this is crazy that this still happens, you know, in our country. In America, we have like water that people can't drink. Yeah. You know, it's insane. Yeah. So I get that. That one's legit. That's a legit gripe.
Yeah, because the Flint water crisis is real. But speaking on like, you know, how things were different, and then kind of tying that into forgiveness, how do you feel about these things that are happening to celebrities now, where you can dig back into somebody's past and look at what they said like 10 years ago, judge it by today's standards, and then all of a sudden now they have to apologize? Or, you know, I'm just thinking about when I was a kid. I said some horrible things when I was a kid, like horrible by today's standards. But, you know, we talked earlier about intent and things. You know, my understanding of the world at that age, or the world's understanding at that time was different, and certain words didn't mean what they mean now, and certain things were acceptable, certain things were just pop culture, like, you know. And now if somebody goes back and hears me saying that, you know, I'm evil. And it's like, I, you know, do I owe you an apology, or can you just forgive me for times being different? Or I that's a weird situation to me.
That's really tricky. And the first one I remember with that was probably, I mean, I know it's been going on for a long time, but you remember Paula Deen, where she just admitted, like, in her childhood, in her culture, when she was growing up, it was, you know, socially acceptable in that environment to use the N-word, you know?
Yeah.
And then just by admitting that she did in her past, that was enough to get her shamed for now. It didn't matter how much she said she regretted that happened. It didn't matter any of that. It just, the fact that she admitted that she used it in an environment where that word was used and where racism was sort of a socially acceptable thing in that era, it's tough, because you go, well, that's disgusting that she would use that word, but shouldn't we understand that as times change, people also change? You know, that's a tricky one. So I don't know how you felt with the Paula Deen thing. That's a few years back, though, right?
That's a few years back. I was thinking about similar situations today, and
yeah.
It's just like we said, with intent. A lot of I think a lot of people want to be on the side of right. Like, they want to be good and not bad, but their interpretation of good is different than yours. And so things that they do, they do things not necessarily seeing them as the bad that they may in reality be, but they didn't do it, you know what I'm saying? They didn't do it with malicious intent, or they didn't do it with hate in their heart. Like, for her, maybe at the time, that was just the way they talked. And I'm not trying to forgive it or excuse it. I'm just, you know, it's like you said, it's hard to put yourself, you know, in that mentality. So you judge people's actions based on your frame of reference and your morality. Yes. And you assume that if they did it, they knew it was wrong, and they're just evil, and they're just mean, you know. And maybe they were just
racist. Yeah.
Maybe they were just ignorant, or maybe they just didn't know better. Maybe they just,
yeah,
you know, maybe, like I said, times were different. Like, I know I used words like faggot and stuff like that growing up, and sissy and punk.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just what we say. I didn't mean it in a way that I thought would, like, destroy someone's life or make someone not feel comfortable being themselves.
We just didn't understand at that time. You know, at that time. Well, so, like, your two of my favorite comedy specials were like Eddie Murphy Raw and Eddie Murphy Delirious. Oh yeah. So they don't know, when you came on my podcast, we talked about comedy. We love I love comedy. That's my thing. But yeah, Eddie Murphy Raw, Eddie Murphy Delirious, two of my favorite specials of all time. But there is some, like, overt homophobia that's super cringy to listen to now. But at the time, that's kind of just how people talk. That was accepted. Yeah. You know, that was the 80s when the AIDS epidemic was happening. And, you know, there was a kind of, when we talk about homophobia, there is, like, actual homophobia, like a fear of AIDS that ended up being an actual fear of, you know, homosexuality at that time. So it's a weird thing to go back and listen to and try to, you know, is Eddie Murphy okay now? Like, is it okay to forgive him for stuff he did at that time in public? It's really tough. It's a tough thing to look at.
So I think that's the part that bothers me a little bit about, like, the cancel culture and where we are right now, is that it does seem rather selective. Like, it does, like, there are certain people that we're okay. Like, if it's almost, Gerard Carmichael, when he had his show, he did an episode, I think, about Bill Cosby, and mm-hmm. one of his points on the show, and Gerard Carmichael is one of my favorite comedians, black or other. I was going to say black comedians, but then I'm like, black or other. Why do I need to qualify?
Just comedian.
Just comedian.
Exactly. He's a good comedian.
But he made the point, like, talent trumps morals. Like, if somebody is talented enough, we'll kind of excuse certain things, you know. Like, yeah, you know, regardless of the accusations against, you know, Michael Jackson, I don't think his music is going anywhere. You know, people are not.
Yeah.
We haven't reached a point where we're just not going to ever play, you know, Michael Jackson music anymore. I don't know if we're at that point with R. Kelly, like, you know, and then is that being selective? Like, is there more damning evidence against R. Kelly, which is why we're more ready to eliminate him from culture completely? Or yeah, it seems that's the part that bothers me when it starts to feel selective.
It's interesting. And like you said, like the people you love and the people you hate, it's easier to forgive the ones you love and the ones you hate. So the people who have things that you have an emotional tie to, like Michael Jackson's music, or even people who are politically affiliated with you. Have you noticed, like, if you're a liberal, then anything that any conservative does is the most offensive, egregious thing.
Right.
But if a liberal does something similar, well, you can try to work around it and try to forgive them. And then the opposite as well, conservatives the same way. Like, if they're on the other side of the aisle politically, then no matter what they do, it's the most heinous thing ever. And there's all these prominent liberal voices now. There's Justin Trudeau up in Canada, who they found the like blackface pictures. I actually wanted to talk to you. That was one of the original things I wanted to talk to you about, was blackface. So I don't know if we can divert on that a little bit, but I feel like the definition of blackface has changed in recent times. Originally, blackface was like the full dark shoe polish, the big red lips, the caricature of a black person. And then at the time when Trudeau did that, or Jimmy Kimmel did, you remember he did Carl Malone on the Man Show, Jimmy Fallon did like Chris Rock.
Yeah.
Like if you were trying to do a genuine impression of somebody, like an homage, then it was okay to darken your skin. But now we've gone back and we said, well, no, anytime you darken your skin, that's technically, that's blackface. So now we go back and look at all these people who were, you know, Halloween costume. They did, the, you know, their favorite celebrity for Halloween, and they put a little bit of a tanner on to try to make it more accurate or whatever. Like, is that something that we can now punish them for? But it seems like on the liberal side, well, now we have to look at blackface in a different way, because Justin Trudeau, the liberal president or prime minister of Canada, he did it. Jimmy Fallon, Jimmy Kimmel speak out against Trump. Well, we can't lose them. So, well, maybe we should look more deeply at their intentions, you know, that kind of thing. But when the conservative guy did the same thing, it's like, no, get rid of him. He's horrible. He's a racist, all that stuff. So I'm wondering what you think about blackface, your opinion on it.
Man, I probably had an opinion until you started talking. And I'm like, I don't know. I think the only thing that bothers me about it is when people of other cultures act as if they don't understand why somebody might find it offensive, you know?
Yeah.
When they just act as if it's their right to do it, is I'm just telling a joke. Like you can tell, like I make offensive jokes. I make jokes that might offend somebody. And if somebody comes and says they're offended, I can't just say, you shouldn't be, because it was a joke. I can say, all right, you know, well then that joke wasn't for you, or, you know, I have to either deal with the fact that I'm gonna lose that audience, or, you know, I have to accept that there's a consequence to what I do or what I say. And that's kind of one of the things I've tried to hold on to from the moment we started this show, was that, you know, we do have this right to be, say, do whatever we want to be or say or do. But we don't have the right to then tell everybody else how they have to feel about it. You know, I can't be whatever I want to be and then tell you, you have to like it, you have to accept it, you cannot be offended by it. I get to be this, but then I get to also take whatever comes along with being that. You know, you can't stop me from saying things, you can't stop me from making the joke, but then I also have to accept the backlash. I posted some things on Facebook today that I was... and I feel like I punked out a little bit. I posted some things and just like posted them with no opinion, like no context, no nothing. Just waiting to see what other people were going to say, because I'm almost too afraid to have an opinion because the backlash is so severe right now, and there's no coming back from it. You can't say something and then say I was uninformed when I said it, or maybe that was in the heat, and maybe okay, now that you've made your point, I see it differently and I understand. You know, you can't do that. It's just like, once... you have to live in your worst moment for the rest of your life. Like, I think I was talking about that in, you know, a previous episode with like the fabulous thing. Like, you do something and then you just have to live in that. You are that person in that moment for the rest of your life. You can never be anything different. And, you know, and I talk about living in shoulds, and because I don't feel like that's the way it should be. But if that's the way it is, then do I have to understand that and then just act accordingly? Or... it's just so rough. It's rough to try to. But I feel like comedy, and I think Dion Cole, another, you know, one of my favorite comedians, mentioned it in his last special. Like, comedy is like that last frontier of freedom, almost. Like, you know, if we get to the point where we can't take a joke, like, you can't say anything, like, what's left? You know, what's left? And I just feel like if you don't, you know, I feel like I say certain things, and I say certain things understanding that that may mean that a certain group is not going to like me and won't listen to this show. And I have to accept that. I have to say, is it worth me feeling like I am who I am? You know, I'm staying true to myself. If it means that I lose a potential audience. And I just have to, that's where I am with it right now. Maybe I'll grow into something different, but right now it's like, I have to weigh the pros and cons and say, I got way off of blackface, but
no, it's good. That's a tough one, man.
It's a tough one.
But yeah, so I feel like offensiveness is kind of this like social gradient, you know, where no matter what you say, there's going to at least be a small amount who are going to be offended. And then if you say something a little more outlandish, it might be a higher amount. And then it kind of gets to a tipping point where now it's enough people are offended by what you've said that it actually is problematic. You know what I mean? So like, it's, you are always going to offend somebody if you say anything that isn't just super bland or stale. Somebody's going to be offended. It's just when you get past that tipping point of an amount of people where you have more people going after you than you have defending you, then suddenly it's going to be problematic. And as the cultural norms change, that gradient also shifts, and the people who get offended also shift as, you know, younger people grow up and, you know, older people die off. You're going to have the different way we value things. So it is tricky, and it is important to say things that, you know, will offend somebody, you know, and you do have to be able to accept that. And like you said, you can't tell people how to feel about something. And with the blackface thing, you know, even if I feel like somebody's intention is they're just trying to do an homage to someone they really like when I heard Jimmy Fallon do Chris Rock, you can tell he worked on that impression really hard, but I can't tell somebody whether or not to be offended by that. I can't even tell them it's objectively smart or stupid or whatever to be offended by it. Cause offense, when it's real, it's a feeling, you know, and as human beings, we're not computers. We have feelings.
Yeah.
I don't like when people just say they're offended for the sake of being offended, but if you're genuinely offended by something, like, I have to appreciate that. I have to appreciate you're a human being with feelings, and maybe seeing something brings imagery of something that's truly awful, you know? So that's how I feel about it. I have no way of telling someone whether or not they should be offended by blackface or anything else. I'm just trying to look at it as objectively as possible. I think I try really hard to be objective and more. I just want to understand it. I don't want to make a judgment on it. I want to understand it. That's always been the way that I look at the world, is from a frame of, I just want to understand stuff, you know?
Yeah. And I think I've tried to make that clear in some of the jokes that I make. Like, I call myself a Neanderthal all the time. Like, I'm really saying I don't understand. The world has changed rapidly around me, and like, now I don't understand for a large part what's okay and what's not okay. I don't understand why this bothers you and why this doesn't, or what pronoun to use. And I'm really seeking an education, and sometimes I get, you know, confronted with the idea that I should already know, or it should somehow be innate, right or wrong, so somehow this be this innate compass that I have that I know you can't say this or you can't say that. But I don't know that maybe the younger generation understands like how quickly, like, things didn't move this fast 20, 30 years ago. But, like, you know, prior to the internet and social media and the way,
yeah,
you know, the way we consume things now is just so fast. I laugh, you know, with my friends about how, you know, a movie came out in the movie theater and you might have to wait a year for it to come out on VHS. You know? And now you get the Blu-ray like a month later, you know. It's on Netflix a month later. Like, just the speed of information and the speed of how we consume things has changed so rapidly that the world literally changed around people. And there are those amongst us that have no idea how to function or how we're supposed to function in this new world. We take our old ideas into this new world and we're just like, we're evil. And I don't want to be evil. I want to be a nice guy. I kind of need some instruction on how to be nice.
I get exactly what you mean. I don't like when people are impatient with that. When you see somebody who's genuinely trying to figure this stuff out and they say offensive stuff along the way in their process of figuring things out, and you're going to be short with them and you're going to judge them on everything they say, and then you're going to demonize them for trying to evolve. And, you know, you can't evolve. It's hard to evolve in silence. It's hard to just do it with receptive skills of reading and listening and trying to figure. You have to be able to talk it out. You have to be able to engage with people and say the things that are causing you, you know, why do we have to use these pronouns? I don't understand. We have men and women, that kind of thing, where you're trying to figure it out. We have to be patient with those people who are genuinely trying to evolve. Now, if they're just an asshole and they're saying, no, I'm not going to do it, there's two genders, whatever.
Then that's
a different situation. But if they're going, why are there more than two genders? I'm trying to figure this out. Why can't we just say he, if they're born a man, you know, that kind of thing, where they're in a journey. They're trying to figure this stuff out. They're trying to figure out this new world. I hate when people are short with those people, you know, when they're not giving them a chance to say things that could cause them to say something offensive when they're trying to actually grow as a person. And I think that's what we need to make sure we're encouraging, is that growth, even if the cost is they might say something offensive along the way. Give people a chance to evolve. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I like the point you made earlier about there being times when offensive things or offensive actions need to be taken. And I wanted to kind of segue that into a discussion a little bit about the NFL, because we got a lot of we have a lot of figures in recent history in the NFL that have either not been forgiven or forgiven too easily, and I argue with my roommate here, and I'll probably have him on the show sometime soon, but we argue about Kaepernick, right? And my argument with the Kaepernick thing is that I can understand, now while I don't believe his kneeling was an offense to the flag, I can understand how a person could view it that way. But
yes,
I think that a protest is supposed to be offensive. You cannot protest something by doing something that doesn't get under people's skin. You're doing something to get your attention, to get a reaction out of you, so you will look at what I'm trying to get you to look at or address what I'm trying to get you to address. And I think, you know, there's so much, and he's probably one of those people that fits in the category of he can never unlive that or outlive that moment. Like, to this day, till right now, I think he doesn't have a job in the NFL, and probably anytime his name is ever mentioned, that is going to be the only thing that anybody's going to talk about. And I'm not sure we as a society ever even, we're not looking at, you know, yes, he did offend you, but there was a reason. You know, like, do you even care about the reason, or is it just I cannot offend you ever or face, you know, dire consequences?
Yeah, the Kaepernick thing, I don't know if I've ever told you this before, but I am a Iraq war veteran. I don't really talk about it all that much.
I didn't know that about you.
Yeah, to me, when I talk to other veterans about it, it is mixed, their opinions on it. I think in this situation, I can't tell people whether to feel offended or not, but I think the offense is entirely manufactured. I don't think there's a lot of logic behind the offense over Kaepernick, and I think history is going to view Kaepernick as a sympathetic figure, and it's just a shame that he has to sacrifice so much to be viewed, you know, for what he did. His career is lost, essentially. A talented man, you know, prime is being wasted right now just because he decided to speak out on an injustice. And it, So logically, to me, the whole kneeling is somehow tied to disrespecting the troops makes zero sense. First, he sat down, right? That was his thing. He sat down, and the people were like, that's offensive. So he asked veterans, he said, how can I show that I'm protesting in a way that is not disrespectful to the troops? And a veteran told him, why don't you try kneeling? Kneeling is a sign of deference. It's a sign of, you know, of respect. So in kneeling, you're still showing that you're protesting, but you're doing it in a way that can't possibly be misconstrued as disrespecting soldiers. And so he said, that makes perfect sense, because that's exactly my intention, is I want to show that I disagree with what's going on in America, but I don't want to show disrespect towards the troops. So then he started kneeling, and that still wasn't good enough. You know, people still misconstrued that in their own way. But in the end, they're doing that in an intentionally, they're turning a blind eye to it, because he showed his intention. You know, obviously, like we said, we judge others on their actions rather than their intentions, but he showed his intentions by switching from sitting to kneeling, and people still can't disconnect what he's doing from somehow disrespecting the flag or disrespecting the troops. And it's entirely a political willingness to turn, you know, to blind themselves to this obvious attempt to, you know, because it's not really about the troops for them. It's about the, you know, Blue Lives Matter and that kind of thing. It's more about disrespecting police, and they're using the troops as an excuse to hate his movement, and that's silly. If you said he's disrespecting police, then you have an argument, and that's a discussion we can have. But when they say this kneeling is somehow disrespectful to soldiers, and even my fellow veterans say it, it just doesn't make any sense logically to me for that to be the case. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you taught me. I didn't know a lot of that history behind how the kneeling came about, so I definitely appreciate that.
Yeah, it's that one bugs me, and so yeah, I think the idea of forgiving Kaepernick, it has a lot to do with the politics of football fans. You know, football fans and NBA fans are actually, it's a different demographic. You know what I mean, politically. So I think if he had made the same kind of thing happen in the NBA, I think he would have been fine. But it has to do with consumerism, capitalism. You know, it's a consumer-run business. So a team doesn't want to take on Kaepernick, not because they think what he did is offensive, but because they go, how are our fans going to react to this? Are there going to be protests? Are we going to lose ticket sales? Are we going to lose viewership because we have Kaepernick on our team? Is it worth it?
Yeah.
And like you said, it's about talent trumping everything. And in this case, Kaepernick is talented enough to be an NFL starter, but I don't think he's talented enough to be like the greatest quarterback of all time. He should be a starter in the NFL. He should even probably be a franchise quarterback, but I don't think he's, you know, Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady. Like, I don't think he's on that tier where teams are willing to sacrifice sales to get them on their team. He doesn't quite reach that point. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I think it ties into what I was saying about the whole talent trumping morals. And I think we see a little bit of that in the Antonio Brown situation, where Antonio Brown is probably, you know, is arguably the best wide receiver in the league right now.
And, yeah.
And, you know, and my issue with the whole Antonio Brown thing is, you know, if you listen to the show, it's been that what we know he did is we know he threatened to hit the general manager in the face, threatened to punch him in the face, and he called him a cracker, which is a racial slur. Now, I don't know if racial slurs just roll off the backs of white people, because
they should.
There's no power behind it.
Yeah, anytime a white person pretends to get mad about cracker, it makes me laugh a little bit. I mean, yeah, obviously I can't tell them whether to get offended or not, but that seems like, how can you possibly get offended by someone saying cracker, you know? Like Dave Chappelle talked about, like, was it Dave Chappelle? Oh, no, it was Louis C.K. He's like, yeah, cracker, oh, that hurt. That reminds me of the times when we used to own land and people, you know? Like, it's just silly. But, no, Antonio Brown, man, is this the wildest offseason any players ever had? That was the craziest saga. That was so much fun to watch. That was wild to watch, just, like, he almost froze his toes off in a cryogenics thing. That was the funniest and most wild. And then all of a sudden it takes a turn at the end with the sexual assault accusation. Yeah. And, you know, I don't know if that in and of itself is enough to trump his talent, but I think that eventually it was just like a headache. Like, look at all this stuff. He's protesting over a helmet. He's doing, you know, threatening the general manager. He's doing silly stuff and, you know, injuring himself in the off season. And so I don't know. I know the Patriots take chances on a lot of shady characters, you know, Josh Gordon and his past and stuff like that. But yeah, I think it just became too much with him. And I don't know if the accusation in and of itself is enough, but I think it was the whole package that is like, man, he might be the best in the NFL, but it's just gotten to be too much even to be worth it for us. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. No. Yeah. Definitely. I definitely see that. But I mean, it even at this point, it looks as if his NFL future is not over. Like he is still 100 times more likely to get a job than Kaepernick. And then I remember, you know,
yeah,
like the Michael Vick situation where, you know, he did his wrong. There's nobody arguing that he didn't, you know, do something wrong. Mm-hmm. He went to prison, you know, served time, came back out, and there were still people that just didn't believe he should ever be allowed to hold a football ever again in life. And I don't think we're there with Antonio Brown. So I'm wondering, like, what is the line, you know, or is it that he's more talented, or is it that he didn't cross a line? It's a weird. That's when it gets selective to me.
Yeah, I was in that camp with Michael Vick, and I was younger. And I think my opinion has changed. And that was one of the situations that really made me change my opinion on forgiveness. And, you know, some things that people do are like a death sentence for me, in the sense, like, if you cross that line, there's no redemption. And I'm trying to get that mindset out.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get, you know, to the point where I can really try to look past even really atrocious stuff and like drowning dogs and stuff like that. They are, you know, I don't want to get into whether or not that's horrible. That is absolutely horrible. But he did, I think part of it was he did get punished. He spent time in jail. I think if he hadn't spent time in jail, if he had just stepped away from the game for a few years and then tried to come back, I think it would have been harder for him.
Yeah.
But I think the fact that, like Mike Tyson, you know, he spent time in prison, people see that. And I think people do want to see, hey, were you punished? Did you get punished? Did you lose something? Like with the Louis C.K. thing, is he being punished enough? You know, he lost his movie on Netflix. He's lost, you know, millions and millions of dollars. Is that enough? Is that enough to make up for his perceived, you know, crime for what he did? That's one of the factors that we used to decide. And like you said, a lot of people were saying he should still never play again. And at that time, I said that for Michael Vick. And then over time, I said, well, he did serve his time. What else can we ask? Should we not be a society that lets people serve their punishment and then come back? Yeah. Like, we have how many people incarcerated? We have a crazy high incarceration rate. Should we just say anyone who's ever been incarcerated can never achieve their dreams? Is that it for them? You know what I mean? And I think we need to try to figure out how we can forgive people, even if they do things that are really egregious. I think that's a good shift. Is we were talking about like things that could be perceived as offensive, or, you know, the time was different. But let's talk about the things that are, there's no two ways about it. It's horrible what they did.
Right.
And should we forgive them for that or not? Like Bill Cosby. For me, that's a tough one. I don't think I would ever be able to forgive Bill Cosby for, you know, the craziness. And it also just seems like he has no remorse about it. You know what I mean? So I don't know. That one to me is beyond reproach.
Yeah, I think that's the step one. Like you kind of need that person to at least admit the wrongdoing. Like if they're still fighting the fact that they didn't do anything wrong, it's kind of hard to forgive somebody for something that they don't even admit that they did. You know, it's like,
if you can
embrace your wrong, I think we need to lay out a path for you to get back. It doesn't need to ever be anything that you can't get back from. It may be a long path. It may be a hard path. It may mm-hmm. be a lot of steps in it. But there's got to be some way for people to work their way back from their worst moment.
Yeah.
You know,
I have a tough one. I have a tough one for you. How about Chris Brown?
Man, all right.
Chris Brown, yeah, that's a tough one, right?
It's a tough one from a couple of perspectives. Is that, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't even remember everything that happened surrounding it.
Well, I mean, obviously, I mean, the big thing is, of course, beating up Rihanna.
When I say I don't remember, I don't remember if he apologized, if he said, you know, if he admitted his wrongdoing, or if he just kind of went away for long enough that it was okay for him to come back. And he's still getting it. That's another problem.
He's had other stuff too. Yeah.
That's another problem that I have. Like, if you do commit a wrong, and even if you admit it, and even if you're punished for it, I think another cliche from my 12-step program, like the most important part of being sorry is like never doing it again. Like, if you really want to show somebody you're remorseful, they talk about in the 12-step program, you know, living amends. Like, there's some things that you can't make. There's no single action you could perform to make it right. You just have to be a better, different person from that point forward. Like, that's your amends. Learning and being better. Like, and if you don't show that, then how do I ever truly believe that you're remorseful or sorry? Like, maybe you're sorry you got caught, but are you really sorry that you did it if you continue to, you know, engage in behaviors that are along the same line?
Yeah, like R. Kelly. Like, he just kept doing it. Like, he never stopped. He just kept doing the crazy, you know, the harem of young women, the weird sex trade stuff. Like, he never stopped doing it. And so, to me, R. Kelly is beyond, you know, forgiveness, at least for now, because he didn't show remorse for it. He's like, everyone's attacking me.
Yeah.
But he never stopped. He never really made amends for what he did. And yeah, I'm looking, and Chris Brown has a nice timeline. So he has the Rihanna abuse. He has a phone robbery, a club shove. Come on. He shoves a bus assault. Yeah, Las Vegas face punch. I love these titles of these: manager attack, gun threat. So yeah, he's got a lot of stuff that show he hasn't really changed his way. Some of them seem, yeah, like the club shove. Who cares? He shoved someone in the club. Oh, he shoved a woman to the ground. Okay, never mind. She would need surgery. Okay, that might be legit. I don't want to come off as too insensitive there. I thought he might have just shoved someone like they were drinking. Another interesting one is Conor McGregor. I don't know how much you follow him, but like his when he threw that hand truck, that dolly through the bus window and like injured other fighters, I was like, man, he's out. They got to kick him out of the UFC. But his talent and his ability to sell and his ability to make money, it was enough that they just kind of swept everything under the rug and they used it as promotion. So that was a situation where I saw talent trumping morals, you know what I mean? And then since then, he's been like, he punched an old man in the face in a bar for not drinking his stupid whiskey. And yeah, Conor, it's interesting, like, when they do have that level of talent, and not just talent, but ability to generate money, you know what I mean? Generate interest and generate money. That's when the PR starts to kick in. That's when the PR gets behind them and starts to try to hide all the bad stuff they did. Can this person still make us money? Right. And in the NFL, it's, can this person win championships for us? That's when the PR starts to kick in, and they try to get us as a society to look the other way on these things and forgive them quicker. You know, yeah, it's forgiveness is complicated, man. There's so many factors.
It's very complicated. You know,
especially collectively as society.
Yeah, and again, I can't. I guess the end thing for me is that, you know, I can't tell anybody. I'm trying to get away from the shoulds. You know, in rehab, it was all about the shoulds. I can't tell you how much that pissed me off, like, to not be able to say should. Like, just anybody out there, I just for a day, see if you can go a day without using the word should. See how fucking infuriating it is. And then somebody like corrects you, like, did you just say should? You know, like, I could say supposed to. I couldn't say should. It was, you know. But yeah, I'm trying to get out of the shoulds and what other people should do or how things should be. But yeah, I just want to live in a world where there's a way back. You know, because I've done, and the world doesn't know all the fucked up shit I've done. And
yeah.
I don't want to say, hopefully you never will, but man, I don't know. But, you know, at some point, out. You know, yeah, it could always come out. And I feel, I said that in a podcast episode. Like, I feel like there's things I've said on this podcast that have already, like, closed doors forever for me. Like, I'll never be able to do this because I said this one time on a podcast, mm-hmm. you know. And I wish that things weren't that way. That there was a way back from anything. If you were truly remorseful, if you were trying to make amends, that there was some way back. Even no matter how difficult, that there was a way back. And it feels like where we are right now is that we want to judge. We want to. You're getting the death penalty tomorrow, and it's over with. We don't ever want to see.
Yeah.
They get to label
people just like that.
Yeah.
Like you get to say, oh, he said that word. Okay, well, he's a homophobe. And now no matter what, you mean that homophobe wants to have a special? That woman beater wants to have a special? Like, no matter what's changed since then, you suddenly just have that adjective tied to you, you know, forever. And anytime anyone wants to hate what you're doing or wants to denigrate you, they get to just throw that adjective, and then nobody gets to say anything. Well, he's changed his ways, blah blah blah. No, that's just your adjective now. Now you have an adjective that's with you forever. Yeah. You know what I mean? And that's kind of silly. We have to look at all the circumstances. We have to look: are they an R. Kelly where they're still doing it, or are they, you know, Michael Vick where they've been punished and they're trying their best to make amends and they're trying to be better people, that kind of thing. You know. But Michael Vick is forever dog killer. That's his adjective, forever.
Yeah. And I wonder why we just can't, you know, I guess my other thing is why we just can't tell the whole story. Like Bill Cosby. Bill Cosby's a rapist. He's also, yes. you know, a philanthropist. He's also a lot of other things. And it'd be nice if, you know, whatever side you stand on with Bill Cosby, if you're still on the, we shouldn't throw him away, or if you're on the, you know, fuck him for life, like, just when you mention him, tell the whole story. Like, yeah, he did this, and he did this. And, you know.
Yeah, it's so tricky because he was so important culturally. He had, what, like, one of the first prominent shows that really had, you know, he was a doctor on TV.
Yeah.
And one of the most important sitcoms for racial, you know, progression. But then, you know, he was doing horrible stuff at the same time. So should we throw out, what is it, don't throw out the baby with the bathwater? Should we just ignore all the important stuff he did for comedy and the important stuff he did for society over that? And honestly, I don't have a good answer for that. That's a tough one.
Yeah, I don't think there is a universal answer, right? So much of has to be a personal choice. But I guess that doesn't help people in the public eye if you only have
a bunch
of personal choices happening.
You don't want to be, that's the other thing, is maybe I could have an opinion on something, but sometimes I have to keep it in, because if I say, well, what about the good things? Then, oh, well, you support a rapist, you support rape. Like, how does that connection make any sense? You know,
right.
But that's how it works. That's sort of culture we have where, while I was looking at all the Democratic candidates and, there was a thing with Joe Biden and there was an integration program where they were busing black kids to white schools, and he was against like busing because he felt like it was causing more problems, the logistics of it, like having to get the buses going, and it was counterproductive because it became like a code word. And so he wanted to try to find a different way to integrate schools. But now when they reference back to it, they say, oh, he was pro-segregation. He's against integration. I'm like, you have to look deeper into it and see, are they supporting the idea itself or, you know, against the idea itself? It's really bizarre how quickly we can throw these labels now these days and not try to look at the context. Context is becoming less and less relevant because everything is tweet. Instagram version, it's a picture, it's a blurb, it's how short can you get the information out and tell the most titillating story, the one that gets the headlines the quickest.
Yeah, I'm fighting that fight with the vaping thing, like, just straight headlines, and the headlines catch everybody's attention, and then the, you know, then I get looked at like I'm killing the entire planet every time I walk down the street.
Science is one of the biggest victims of all this, climate change and, you know, vaping, things like that, where the real studies are so complicated that it's hard for us. I mean, we're not scientists, so we need it broken down. But when it becomes too simplified and it becomes about ratings rather than about the actual science, then you lose a lot there. My friend posted some really long thing about biological gender and stuff like that, and I was reading page after page after page, and then I was just like, man, I'm so bored. And I realized, man, I am the problem too. I can't sit through all this science.
Yeah.
And it sucks because this is such a complicated thing that I need to have the patience to sit through this, but we just don't. We don't have the patience to want to try to understand every angle of it, you know what I mean? Yeah. This is way, we're getting way off topic, but that's cool.
No. That's what this show does.
Yeah.
But
go ahead. Forgiveness, it's so many different factors, especially as collective forgiveness. What do we have? We have, you have whether or not they were punished enough, whether or not they show remorse, you have whether or not they're talented enough to warrant forgiveness, you know, like is it even worth it to accept them back into the, you know, society or whatever. And then you have whether or not they're money makers, whether or not they're needle movers, whether or not they're going to be someone who is important, you know, not just talent, but also financial viability, whether or not the PR machine is going to get behind them and get them going. And then also the heinousness of their act, because if it's bad enough, it doesn't matter how talented they are, like they're probably going to be beyond forgiveness, you know what I mean? So
yeah.
it's a balance of all those factors coming together. I don't know how you could create a visual chart or diagram to overlap all of these things and create a real clear picture of what it takes. It's really complicated.
I think, you know, just for me now, personally, I am trying to learn, like my goal is to always be willing to forgive, simply and selfishly, because I want to be forgiven. Like this is a very selfish ideal for me. This is not me trying to be like holier than thou or somehow be, you know, better than anyone, because I'm willing to forgive. I don't even know if I'm willing all the time. I want to be willing because I pray to God that people are willing to forgive me. That's the only way I have to approach it right now.
Yep. That makes sense. Forgiveness is often about yourself, but it's also realizing that we're all flawed and we all shouldn't be judged on our worst actions. We should, they should try to look a little bit more at our character and our intentions and our effort to make amends.
Yeah. I deal right now with the fact that, you know, as a father, I feel like I am now seeking the forgiveness that I have always denied my own father. And, you know, I cannot expect my wife and my daughter to ever forgive me if I can't get over that hurdle myself. That's the story that always rings in my head whenever I think of the idea of forgiveness.
That's true. That's true stuff. That's
but before,
profound, yeah.
So since we got all the profound stuff out the way, we will do
all
something.
All right, can we do something fun?
We'll do something completely ignorant. All right, so.
All right, cool.
You said in your questionnaire that you were willing to play the world's coolest game show. Still standing?
Yep. We played it on my podcast, I think. I made my own weird version of it. So, I got to be willing. Let's do it.
All right, here we go. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another round of the world's most poppinest game show. You guessed it, it's time for Guess the Ethnicity. I am your host, J.Dot Flan, and your contestant today is going to be Dan. Dan, are you ready to guess the ethnicity?
I am ready to get in trouble. Here we go.
All right. So our first headline, I'll start with the easy. I think this was an easy one.
Okay.
All right. I'll give you the headline first. Headline is, inmate escapes jail for 7 hours and then comes back. Based purely on the headline, do you have a guess of what his... And we're setting the bar at hopefully this does, well, it's going to offend. Why am I trying? We're setting the bar at white, non-white. You can get granular, okay, if you want to. If you want to get down into the weeds with it, be my guest. But you only have the burden of white or non-white.
Okay. So I was, my immediate reaction to the headline was sort of like a guilt culture where he left and then he felt guilty. Like, what am I doing? So I immediately was thinking like a Jewish or Catholic, one of those culture. So based on that, I'll go with white. So on the headline alone.
On the headline
alone. So that's my first thing. Yes. All right. Yes.
So now I'll give you the location. This happened in Humphreys County in Tennessee. Did that change anything for you?
Tennessee, I'm not super familiar with demographics. I know Tennessee probably is fairly balanced, although I'm sure based on inmate populations, and it doesn't seem to matter where it is, there's going to be skewed numbers compared to the actual demographics of the outlying area. So it doesn't change a lot for me, actually.
All right. And at any point, you know, you can, you know, throw the gauntlet down and say, it's your final answer. You've got a smoking gun.
Okay. But
I'll just give you a few more.
I want more information. You should always have more information before you make an educated guess. It should always be an educated guess.
All right. So the suspect fled from Humphreys County Jail at about 8 p.m. on the 4th of July, and then he returned at 3 a.m., 7 hours after he fled the facility. He had been in prison at the time for theft of property, burglary of a motor vehicle, and failure to pay child support.
Ooh, okay. So the date was interesting because it's July 4th. Maybe he just wanted to go see some fireworks and come back. And I actually have no, I know that, you know, I grew up in a white culture and we do get very excited for fireworks. I feel like that's an America thing, though. I don't know if that's necessarily a racial thing. So, yeah, I'd have to ask your opinion on that. Like, is fireworks a national thing to Black folks also get excited and go to the fireworks shows and, you know, find the special spot where they sit out and lay out their blanket and have a nice picnic and watch the fireworks shows? I'm just wondering about that.
I don't know about
that. Is it okay to ask you a question?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I don't know about picnics. Okay. It was a big, I know, you know, growing up, my mother is an English teacher, but a history major. And so 4th of July was a big deal for her. And there was a particular parking lot in DC we could drive to and sit in the parking lot. She let us sit on top of the car and we could see the fireworks from like the Capitol area pretty clearly from there. So yeah, I think Black people enjoy fireworks. We get a big deal out of it, you know. Okay. There's also, you know, usually some gunshots, but I think white people do that too.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that seems okay. So that one doesn't tell me a lot. The crime though, can you tell me the crimes again?
Theft of property, burglary of a motor vehicle, and failure to pay child support.
All right, carjacking and failure to pay child support. How do I not get in trouble? I would just say my opinion has changed, and based on stereotypes that are totally unfair, my opinion has changed to non-white at this point.
All right.
But if there's more information, I would love to hear it.
Let's see. I'll just give you things. The last piece I have is like from the police perspective. So,
okay.
The police entered him as an escaped inmate after his disappearance and declared a cash reward for anyone who had information that could help identify his whereabouts. When I read that, I was wondering if he thought, if he came back, if he could get that reward.
If he could get the cash reward. And possibly, come back.
You know, possibly pay some of his child support or something. I don't know.
I feel like, yeah, I feel like at least he could have like had his buddy, hey, can you take me back to jail and... you know, we could split this cash reward or something. I feel like a savvy person would have done that. Yeah, that really makes me think. Because, yeah, I feel like someone who's savvy enough to steal a car. I mean, at least he could have paid child support with some of that reward money. You know,
right? That's what I'm thinking.
That's a tough one.
I'm thinking about.
Are we allowed? Yeah, think about the kid, exactly. You got to think about your child. Oh, but I don't know if that changes my opinion on the race at all. That just is a funny detail. That's a very funny detail. But I feel like anyone could be that goofy. Am I allowed to hear his name?
I think the name would give it away.
Okay, so can I make my official guess, and then you tell me the name, and then that sort of gives away the answer.
Yeah, gotcha.
Okay, so I'm going to guess non-white. Based on convicts, rates, I mean, percentage-wise, statistics, gives me a better chance if I say non-white. So I'm going to go with non-white.
Going with non-white on that one. And
yes.
Fuck! No, sorry. Stephen Ray Ham. 45-year-old.
Stephen Ray Ham. That sounds so white.
45-year-old man from Humphreys County Jail. Yeah, he checked out at 8 p.m. on the 4th of July and came back at 3 a.m. Sound like he got out and got to do some partying or something and made his way back to jail.
So he's white?
He is white, yes. He is white.
So I went with the statistics. I played probability. You can never be mad at yourself for playing probability, you know, because sometimes in the end you'll win. If if you gamble on the probability side, you'll win in the end. But I should have trusted my heart and, gone with white like I originally thought.
You stayed out of trouble, though. You didn't make any, like, blatantly racist determinations. Like, you know, these would be,
I'm trying statistics. To be objective.
All right. So yeah. We'll do one more. This one may be a little bit harder. I think it's a little bit harder than that one.
Okay.
All right. So your headline here is, suspected Ohio bank robber hands over a note with his name on it.
Hands over a note with his name on it.
Yeah, so the note that he gave in his bank robbery had his name on it.
So, like, the note he said, give me all your money or whatever, he put the note on the counter to, like, try to silently tell him to give the money? Or where was the note involved in bank robbing?
Yeah, this was the note he handed the teller. It had his information.
Okay, so he's like, give me all your money. I have a gun. My name is John Smith or whatever.
I'll give you more details about the note, but based on that headline. Sure. Headline
based
alone,
on the headline alone. Yeah. I mean, this sounds like drugs are involved no matter what. So that's the thing. Like, was it crack or was it meth? I guess.
Yeah, I'll tell you from spending some time in rehab facilities, meth is universal.
Meth is now universal. Okay.
Yeah, everybody's
meth is crossed
meth.
Over. It's not the white drug anymore. All right. Yeah, to do that, I think drugs would have to be involved. My instinct is white on this one. So that's just my first instinct with no information.
All right. So I'll give you. I did say Ohio, but this is Cleveland, Ohio. Cleveland. Suspect entered the bank, passed the note. When the teller took the note and looked at it, on the other side, she saw his name. He had used the note earlier at the DMV, and it had his name and information on it.
So he took, like, a slip from the DMV for his name.
Yeah, so he just turned it over and wrote his robbery note.
Yeah, the DMV can make anyone become an irrational person. Maybe he saw, like, the registration fee for his, you know, trying to update his registration. He's like, man, I got to rob a bank just to afford to drive my car. So he went straight from the DMV over to the bank. That doesn't tell me a lot about the race, but it tells me a lot about the mental state of the person. Maybe it wasn't drugs. Maybe it was the rage, the DMV rage that we all experience, you know, that just threw him over the edge.
I'll tell you that most of these hints, you know, are just, they just dig into the level of stupidity behind this. They don't really
A picture of his race. So I'll stick with white because I don't have any information to change it. Cleveland, I feel like, is another one where, you know, it's a very, I think there are probably more white people, but I think it's pretty diverse there. They have it depends on the neighborhood sort of thing. I think, I don't know Ohio that well. I'm just going based on what I've seen. I'm sticking with white for now.
All right, and final clue on here. I'll give you, one more piece about his stupidity, and then I guess the punishment at the time of the headline. The teller that took the note, actually, I guess, in an attempt to let him know how stupid what he was doing was, referred to him by his name. She referred to him directly by his first name when she gave him the money. And she said it more than one time, I guess, in an attempt, again, to let him know, like, dude, your information is on the note. As soon as he left, she notified law enforcement. It was unclear to the writer of the article if charges had been filed against this gentleman at the time of the at the time that they published the article. I found that to be interesting information, that it was unclear whether charges had been filed in a situation that seems this cut and dry.
Yeah, it seems like they would.
I'm sorry.
That leads me towards white a little bit more whenever the justice system is doing something kind of fishy. It does lead to, you know, whenever they're humanizing criminals and you know, actually making coherent decisions about them instead of rushing to judgment, it does lean towards white with how messed up our system is. I guess I'll be sticking with white. That is pretty funny that she tried to give him a hint. I don't know, that seemed dangerous to me, like, oh, now you know who I am, time to start shooting. So that's not, even though, you know, you're trying to let him know how stupid it was, at the same time, it seems like you just wouldn't want to give them any information that could set them over the edge and, you know, shoot you in the face or whatever. So that's pretty brave by her to call him by his name.
I had because
you know, whenever, because whenever you oh, now they know who we are, we have to kill them, that kind of thing. You know,
yeah, I didn't even think.
I don't think that was the wisest thing. Yeah, so maybe she was humanizing the person as well. So that also leads me towards white. Humanizing criminals is a trait reserved for white criminals, it seems like. Because, like, you know, that guy, the Rock, whatever, the guy who raped the woman in the alley, the passed out woman, they're like, oh, he's such a talented swimmer, he's such a good academic, you know. Yeah. They go into all that stuff. And same with this recent case with Botham Jean, where all of a sudden they're like trying to dig into his past and be like, oh, you know, he had history with marijuana. Oh, okay, so I guess he deserves to be shot in his home because he smoked weed, you know. It's just crazy. I'll stick with white just based on this information.
All right. And I'm going to take blame for this one because I think I led you a little bit. But in this case...
You lead me astray?
Yeah.
Damn it.
Michael Harrell, 54. I'll go further than to say he was not white. He was black.
Okay. He was black.
And was actually...
Well, that's good.
Yeah, was actually a frequent customer of that bank. So this is just...
So it was his branch. It was his branch.
It was his branch. Yeah, that he decided.
Was
to
he
rob.
Wearing a mask or anything?
In the photo they have in this article, he is not wearing a mask. He's not wearing a mask. He handed over a note with his information on it, and he went to a bank that he frequents.
So the teller, like, hey, how's it going? You want to deposit your check again?
Right.
I'm here to rob you today.
You want to put this money? You remember, back in your account?
Yeah, White Man Can't Jump, the scene early in the movie where the guy is trying to steal money to help pay his bet or whatever, the big tall dude.
Yeah.
And he's like, is that you? Like, they know who he is. Like, no, that's not me. But it's like his body type is so obvious. It's like clearly a customer, a frequent customer. Yeah, that's pretty funny to try to rob a place that you frequent. Yeah. But, you know, he was in an irrational state of mind after the DMV, you know? He was like, I got to pay all these extra charges, you know. I got to run my my car through the environment thing and get that. That's another $80, you know. Trying to figure it out. I guess I better go rob this bank.
I got to stand in a line just to find out I had the wrong form from the beginning.
Exactly, got the forms. Yeah, you got to take another number. Come on, bro. I've been sitting here for an hour. You want me to take another number? Just madness. DMV is badness, and it makes people do irrational things like robbing the branch they always go
the
into.
They go to, yeah. Hint, hint, Cleveland government, you need to fix what's going on in the DMV. But yeah.
Government. Well, I don't want to get into that political stuff.
We'll save that for another talk.
All right. Yeah, sure.
But no, man, I definitely appreciate you coming on the show. Is there anything you wanted to, anything you got going on you want to share with the audience before we get out of here?
No, I mean, my podcast is pretty much dead now. You can try to find it. I think I might still be paying for it. But yeah, definitely go back and listen to the TWS episode, what was the title? Are Black People Funny? Which was a very titillating title. That was a very fun episode.
Yeah, it was definitely a lot
but
of fun.
Yeah, the podcast is down for now. It's just hard to do the logistics being over here in Korea, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Be nice to each other. Try to forgive. Try to look at things through the perspective of other people. And try to forgive people who don't follow your ideologies. Look at, like, Ellen and George W. Bush sitting together and realize that just because you disagree on political things doesn't mean you have to dehumanize people, you know? Don't always assume the worst in people. That's my final message for you.
Good advice from a wise man. This is my buddy Dan. Definitely appreciate, you know, him having him on the show. This has been a great
episode.
And
I want to say thank you so much for being so open about your, you know, about the steps you're going through, open about mental illness, open about the things that are bothering you. It's great for you, but it's good for other people to see. It's always good for me to read that stuff. It makes me think about my own life too. So it's even though we only talked that once on the podcast, being connected on social media, it's given me insight into your life. And it's been great following you, and I've gained a lot of respect for you that I didn't know about when we first met. So yeah, man, keep that up. Keep up what you're doing.
I appreciate it. Yeah. It's all selfish. This is my therapy. This helps, you know, this helps me not feel so hidden and alone, you know, to just, you know, share my stuff with people, even people that I never met or can't see. You know, I feel like we're connected somehow because I get to talk to you about all my bullshit once a week.
Yeah. Good, man.
But all right, so I don't know how old you are, but I get the feeling that we're from somewhere in the same generation.
1983. I'm 1983. I think you're pretty close, right?
Yeah, I'm 81, so I'm just a tad bit. I'm like December 81, so I'm just a little bit older than you.
Okay.
All right, so you said West Coast Beats. So I think I picked, I think I may have picked the perfect rock out song. And I'm so sad we only get 30 seconds before they like, for the copyright.
Before
they flag me. But I think I got the perfect song. So we're going to head out. People, be safe. Be the light. We're about to rock out. Hope you rock with me.
Back to the block, Snoop Doggy Dog, Monkey, yeah, the dot went solo on that ass, but it's still the same. Long Beach is the spot where my